And we're going to start in Luke 14. We're going to look at multiple places. But we're going to launch from Luke 14, starting at verse 25 down to verse 33, which may not be a place you might think, but I do believe it. Before we get to point one, I'll just give you a heads up. We're going to cover two important foundational concepts, and then we'll give you three applications or three lessons. But the first part of those concepts begin here in Luke 14. And I'll begin in verse 25, and we're going to read down to verse 33. "And there went great multitudes with him, and he turned and said unto them, If any man come to me, and hate not his father, and mother, and wife, and children, and brethren, and sisters, yea, in his own life also, he cannot be my disciple. And whosoever doth not bear his cross, and come after me, cannot be my disciple. For which of you, intending to build a tower..." Now notice, the narrative continues. There's not a break here. It's just he's continuing the same narrative. So whatever he just said in these first couple of verses, what he says next, there is a connection here. "For which of you, intending to build a tower, sitteth not down first, and counteth the cost, whether he have sufficient to finish it? Lest haply, after he hath laid the foundation, and is not able to finish it, all that behold it begin to mock him, saying, This man began to build, and was not able to finish. Or what king, going to make war against another king, sitteth not down first, and consulteth whether he be able with 10,000 to meet him that cometh against him with 20,000? Or else, while the other is yet a great way off, he sendeth an ambassage and desireth conditions of peace. So likewise, whosoever he be of you that forsaketh not all that he hath, he cannot be my disciple." Now notice that phrase at the end of verse 33, "he cannot be my disciple." And you'll notice at the end of verse 26, you see that phrase, "he cannot be my disciple." And you see that at the end of verse 27, "cannot be my disciple." So this whole narrative is all connected. A lot of times we preach it in sections just because there are several different things being taught here. But there is a flow here. So let me back up, and then we'll get to what I'm trying to get across here in this text. But let me just give you something first. A spending plan is what we're talking about, and it's a better name for a budget. We could call this lesson a budget, but it's really a spending plan. Some people, when they budget money, they budget their money. The idea is they have X amount, and they don't want to spend more than they have. And that's their budget. They say, "I got $500. My budget is $499. That's my budget." Okay, now, If that's the way you budget it, so it's not a very wise way, but so be it. But that's not what we're talking about. So we're not talking about not overspending. Now, it's good not to overspend, but that doesn't mean that you're being a good steward with what you're spending. Just because you don't go in the negative doesn't mean necessarily you're spending the money in a way that best honors the Lord. Now, if you overspend, obviously that's bad. But just not overspending, there's more to this idea of a spending plan that we're talking about, this how faith connects to finances. So let me hold your place in Luke 14 and go with me to Luke 19. And look with me at verse 20. Luke 19, look at verse 20. Now, the teaching here in this account is, you know, he gave the one man, let me see if we find the exact verse because I dropped down to my text. Well, look at verse 13. "And he called his 10 servants and delivered to them 10 pounds and said unto them, Occupy till I come." So these are 10 servants. They have 10 pounds, and occupy means invest it, increase what I gave you. Use some wisdom and increase it. Now let's drop down to verse 20. "And another came saying, Lord, behold, here is thy pound, which I have kept laid up in a napkin. So he was given 1 pound. He returns 1 pound. Did he overspend? No. He didn't overspend. He didn't waste it. He still had it. He was given a pound. He returns a pound. Okay, behold, here is thy pound, which I have kept laid up in a napkin, for I feared thee, because thou art an austere man. Thou takest up that thou layest not down, and reapest that thou didst not sow. And he saith unto him, this is the Lord speaking back to the servant, Out of thy own mouth will I judge thee, thou wicked servant. So here's a fella. You could say he did not overspend. He still had a pound. But notice, thou wicked servant, thou knewest that I was an austere man, taking up that I laid not down and reaping what I did not sow. Wherefore then gavest not thou my money into the bank, that at my coming I might have required my own with usury, with increase, with profit? And he said unto them that stood by, Take from him the pound, and give it to him that hath 10 pounds. So my point is this, just because you don't overspend doesn't mean necessarily that you're doing well with your spending. Now, that is like kindergarten level. Don't spend more than you make, okay? That's kindergarten. But we're trying to go beyond that and say, okay, how can I spend my money in such a way that honors and glorifies the Lord in the way I do it? So that is the idea of a spending plan. Now, having a spending plan should make us a good steward. Now, without a plan, you really don't have a budget. If you have no plan on how you're spending, you don't really have a budget. Now, people think, I have a budget because I'm not going to spend more money than I have. But that's really not what a budget is. A budget is a spending plan, a plan to spend money in the most effective, efficient way possible that honors the Lord. Now, here's why I'm saying that. The teaching in our text, and I said there's two paramount concepts, two important concepts. Here's the first one. The teaching in our text deals with counting the cost. That's how it begins in Luke 14. We read verse 26, verse 27, and then down to verse 28. For which of you, intending to build a tower, says not down first and counteth the cost? Okay, so there's some accounting, some thinking, some planning that's going on. So the teaching in our text deals with counting the cost. Now watch this, and it's taught within the framework of verse 26 and verse 27. So the counting the cost is in verse 28, but he precedes it. Before he ever talks about counting the cost, he says, understand this, look at verse 26, that if any man come to me and hate not his father and mother, and obviously he's not talking about you got to hate your mom and dad. Other verses teach us what the concept here, which is our love for the Lord is supreme. You love the Lord more than you love your parents. You love the Lord more than you love your kids. You love the Lord more than you love yourself, your country, anything. The love of the Lord is supreme. And so the concept now of spending plan, counting the cost, is built on this idea that our love for the Lord is supreme. And then he says this in verse 27, and whosoever does not bear his cross and come after me. This is the idea of the cross life, the sacrificial life. So we could say this now, trying to tie some things together. The teaching in our text deals with counting the cost and is taught within the framework of a supreme love for God and a willingness to sacrifice to serve God. So however I'm doing a spending plan, it is foundational that I'm trying to love the Lord supremely and I'm willing to live a sacrificial life as much as needed to serve the Lord with my life. Then I can now start thinking about a spending plan. So that means this. It means that a spending plan, now this is the, in one sentence, this is the concept here. It means that a spending plan isn't just how to spend money efficiently, but how to spend money effectively in a way that prioritizes loving God supremely and serving God sacrificially. So a spending plan is just, I'm planning how to spend my money efficiently, true, because I don't want to overspend and I got to try to decide on what goes where. So there is an efficiency, but there's also an effectiveness. I want to effectively love the Lord the most, supremely above all things, and I want to live a sacrificial life in my service to the Lord. So that's the basis this of counting the cost, this idea of a spending plan. Now, even though there may be different ways to do a spending plan, and there are, and I'm really not giving you a nuts and bolts type spending plan. I'm giving you some concepts and some principles tying faith back to finances as we've done throughout this series. So even though there may be different ways to do a spending plan, now watch this, the purpose of the spending plan is always the same. Whatever way you do your spending plan, the purpose for a believer never changes. The purpose is always the same. I got to love God supremely, and I got to be willing to live a sacrificial life in my service to the Lord. Those two things are always foundational to whatever your spending plan is. That's the first concept. Here's the second concept behind a spending plan. A spending plan is basically how to cover three main areas of a believer's life. You have three main areas that you got to figure out how to use your finances in a way. Again, okay, let me back up. I want to love the Lord supremely. I want to live sacrificially in my service. That covers three main areas of my life. Area number one, now. How I live right now. My current bills and my expenses. So my spending plan, because I'm going to live for the Lord now, okay, I'm going to love the Lord supremely, serve the Lord sacrificially now, so I've got to figure out how to deal with my current bills and expenses. That's the first area it covers. The second area it covers is later. That would be my savings, my retirement, emergency funds. Because I want to serve the Lord now, but I want to also think about the rest of my life until I see Jesus. I want to be living for the Lord. I don't want to do something stupid now that's going to trip me up down the road and I can't live for the Lord the way I want to live for the Lord. So it covers the now, it covers the later, and here's the third area covered. It covers the forever. I want to lay up eternal treasures in heaven. So however I'm spending my money, the plan I'm spending my money, I got to deal with what's happening now. I want to think about what's going to come later. And also, I want to consider the forever. I want to, when I'm in heaven, I want to honor the Lord in the forever, eternal treasures in heaven. So I'm going to give you three helps in developing a spending plan. Again, let me back up. There's a lot of good resources out there, a lot of Christian, there is some good secular, there's a lot of good Christian resources out there, and then there's a couple of different ways you can do this. I'm giving you the concept of that we put in practice, whatever plan you use. These are the concepts that always should be a part of that plan. So I'm going to give you three of those, and then we'll give you some basic steps towards the end, if you notice in your notes. So here's number one, the first big concept. Number one, always put God first in your budget. This deals with the forever. We deal with the forever first. You know why? Because forever is a whole lot more than right now. My time now and my time later is only a speck in the big bucket of eternity. So I'm first thing I'm doing, I'm thinking about eternity. Let me give you a very famous verse about this. Malachi chapter 3, verse 8. No, we're not going there. We are going there. Malachi chapter 3. Always put God first in your budget. Malachi chapter 3, look with me at verse 8 and 9. The question that Malachi asked the people of Israel, will a man rob God? Yet, now it's the Lord speaking, but Malachi is the one who's the human person there. Yet ye have robbed me. But ye say, wherein have we robbed thee? And here's the answer, in tithes and offerings. Now notice the result of that robbing. You are cursed with a curse, for you have robbed me, even this whole nation. Now, let me give you something foundational. Now, there is, and I hesitate to say this, but I'll go ahead and say it just because I'm going to say it. There are those who have been, we're just calling Johnny come lately, 30-year-old type people, pastors, who have come up with the idea that, you know, you don't got to tithe, tithing's not really biblical, soul winning's not really biblical, separation's not really biblical. You know what the result of those churches are? They grow. They have huge numbers because they can show up and live the way they want, and there's no accountability, there's no responsibility, and there's no stepping on the toes. You know, I go there and I don't feel like I have to give. I don't feel like I have to do anything. I just go there. What do you mean you don't have to do anything? Doing something is the whole part. Once we're saved, doing something is what Christianity is about. Ephesians 3, 8, 9 says, we're saved by grace through faith, and that not of yourselves is a gift of God, not of works, lest any man should boast. And then it says in verse 10, which I won't quote perfectly, but it says, but we are created in Christ Jesus unto good works, which he has foreordained that we should walk in them. The whole purpose, once you're saved, is to get busy serving God. If you feel like, as a believer, you don't have any responsibility to do anything, you're not right with God. You're backslidden. That's carnality. Spiritual people are working for Jesus. That's what the Holy Spirit is compelling us to do. So here we go. The tithe belongs to God. And if you use it for anything else, you are guilty of robbing God and cannot claim to be honest and trustworthy. You can't say you're an honest person or trustworthy person when you're robbing people. You know, I would hope every drug dealer in the world gets saved. So I'll just say that as my premise about what I'm about to say next. But if someone's out on the street corner selling drugs, that's not the person I'm going to ask to go teach a Sunday school class or to babysit kids. They don't seem very trustworthy. And so if I'm robbing God, if I'm not tithing, I'm robbing God. And you're not a very honest person or a trustworthy person. You say, well, I pay all my bills, but you're... okay. Well, let me give you the next statement. To not tithe so you can pay your other bills is like robbing a bank to pay your bills. People may understand your motive, but it doesn't make it any less wrong. Okay, so you go to Huntington. You go up on Abbey Road to Huntington. And you walk in, you put a handkerchief over your face or a mask over your face or hood over your head or whatever you do. There's a stick up. And you lay out just your utility bills and say, I want enough money to pay my utility bills. And they give you that exact amount of money. You know, my guess is this. People are going to say, man, what a guy. He only stole enough to pay his bills. But that's not what the judge is going to say. He's going to say, you robbed a bank and you're going to go to prison. Because it's wrong to rob a bank. It doesn't matter why you robbed a bank. It's not your money, and you took it, and there's a penalty for that. And the same thing is true about the Lord. It's not yours. It's His, and you took it, and you did something. You say, but I paid Ohio Edison. Okay, so that's like robbing Huntington Bank and paying Ohio Edison. It's the same concept. The motive may be commendable, but the action not so much. Go with me to Proverbs 6. Proverbs chapter 6. Because actually the Bible speaks exactly about that. Proverbs number 6. Look with me at verse 30. Proverbs 6, verse 30. It says, men do not despise a thief if he steals to satisfy his soul when he's hungry. In other words, they understand. But, verse 31, if he be found, he shall restore it sevenfold. He shall give all the substance of his house. It doesn't let you off the hook. I can say, well, I understand why you did it, but you still did wrong, and there's a penalty to pay. So always put God first in your budget. We don't want God's curse. We don't want God's judgment. We always want to honor the Lord in all things. Now, there is I mentioned these Johnny-come-lately people who say, well, you know, here's what they say. The tithe is the law, and the law is no longer in effect. Now, there's a word that describes people like that. Dumb. Capital D, capital U, capital M, capital B. Because that is, let me tell you, that is not even biblical. The tithe is in the law, but it's not part of the law. Did you know tithe existed before the law existed? Let me show you. Go with me to Genesis 14. And by the way, just because it's in the law doesn't mean it is no. You know, murder is in the law. But I'm going to tell you, the Lord kind of frowns against it still. Genesis 14. Genesis 14. And look with me at verse 17. And the king of Sodom went out to meet him after his return. I'm at Genesis 14, 17. From the slaughter of Chedorlaomer, and of the kings that were with him at the valley of Shavi, which is in the king's dell. And Melchizedek, king of Salem, brought forth bread and wine, and he, Melchizedek, was the priest of the Most High God. And he blessed him. He, Melchizedek, blessed him, Abraham, and said, blessed be Abram of the Most High God, possessor of heaven and earth. And blessed be the Most High God, which hath delivered thy enemies into thy hand. And he, now it flips, he now is Abram, or Abraham, and he, Abraham, gave him, Melchizedek, tithes of all. So you have Abraham tithing to Melchizedek as the priest. Go with me to Genesis 28. Now, if you don't know, this is, the law doesn't show up until Exodus. Okay, so we're way ahead of that. Probably 200 years before the law, I would think. Genesis 28. Look with me at verse 18. And Jacob rose up early in the morning and took the stone that he had put for his pillows and set it up for a pillar and poured oil upon the top of it, and he called the name of that place Bethel, but the name of the city was called Luz at the first. And Jacob vowed a vow, saying, if God will be with me and will keep me in this way that I go and will give me bread to eat and raiment to put on so that I come again to my father's house in peace, then shall the Lord be my God. And this stone which I have set for a pillar shall be God's house. And of all that thou give me, will I surely give the tenth unto thee. You know what the tenth is? The tithe. The tithe actually means tenth. So you have Abraham tithing, you have Jacob tithing, and this is before the law. Now, it's in the law, so let's go to Leviticus 27. I'm not denying that it's not mentioned in the law, but that doesn't mean that it's only applicable for that particular group of people at that particular time. Leviticus 27, because they were tithing before there ever was a law. The law is like Ten Commandments. That's what we mean by that. Leviticus 27 and all the other ancillary laws that the Lord gave during that time. Leviticus 27, go with me to verse number 30. And we read down to verse 34. And all the tithe of the land, whether of the seed of the land or the fruit of the tree, is the Lord. It is holy unto the Lord. Notice, it is the Lord's. It belongs to him. And if a man will at all redeem aught of his tithes, he shall add thereto the fifth part thereof. And I'll explain that in a moment. And concerning the tithe of the herd or the flock, even whatsoever passeth under the rod, the tenth shall be holy unto the Lord. He shall not search whether it be good or bad, neither shall he change it. If he shall change it all, then both it and the change thereof shall be holy. It shall not be redeemed. These are the commandments which the Lord commanded Moses for the children of Israel in Mount Sinai. When it says in about redeeming it, if a man would all redeem aught of his tithes, it had to do with the way that they would bring their tithes, because you're talking about an agricultural, rural society. So sometimes, because of the distance, because of other factors going on, the sheep was a tithe, but they couldn't get the sheep to the place where it needed to go, so they would sell the sheep, take the money, bring it the money in, but they had to add a fifth, 20%. So whatever if they sold the sheep for $100, they brought $120. That's what he's talking about there. It had just to do with the Lord in his mercy helping people be able to obey it better. All right, then people say, well, Jesus never told us to tithe. I'm glad you said that. Go with me to Matthew 23. First thing, he never told you not to tithe. Do you ever consider that? We already have the law, we already have the Old Testament, that's what I meant to say, the Old Testament teaching on tithe, and we go into the New Testament, it never says in the New Testament, quit tithing. Okay, but he does mention tithing. Matthew 23. Look with me at verse 23. Woe unto you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, for you pay tithe of mint and anise, I guess it is, and cumin, and have omitted the weightier matters of the law, judgment, mercy, and faith. These ought you have done, and not to leave the other undone. In other words, you should be showing, if all you do is tithe and you're hurting people, the Lord's not happy with you. He's saying, you're supposed to do both. Yeah, tithe, but also, in your dealings with people, you got to consider that as well. So the Lord is not telling them not to tithe. In fact, he's commending them for their tithing and saying, but, there's more to it than that. So you have the tithe mentioned before the law, during the law, in the New Testament. Now, there is a teaching, and I'm going to spend a few minutes here because there's all kinds of, if you start going online looking for financial resources, I never know what you're going to get into. So I'm kind of giving you some ammunition in case you get on the wrong sites. There are those who talk about grace giving. And I understand some people mean it in a good way. They're not anti-tithe. And really, I would say I give because of God's grace. He has bestowed things upon me and I just want to give. When I tithe, I don't go, oh, here it goes. Oh, by the way, I forget to put my offering on the plate. Speaking of not tithing, okay. It'll go Sunday. I haven't reached in and grab it. What do you know? So anyways, when I tithe, it's not like, oh, my friend. Okay. The Bible says the Lord loves a cheerful giver. And so I do believe in grace giving because I give because of the grace of God. But what they mean is this: you just give whatever you think the Lord wants you to give. Well, that's good. And if you're talking about faith promise or offering, which is a free will, other type of free will offerings, but the tithe is 10%. You know how much 10% is? 10%. If it's $100, it's 10 bucks. If it's a million, it's 100,000. It's 10%. You don't have to really have to sit there and say, how much of the tithe do you think the Lord wants me to give? He wants you to give all the tithe. The tithe belongs to him. So I'm not against grace giving if you're talking about the motive that you really want to give because of the grace of God. But if you're thinking that we're no longer under the law, and so therefore I'm just, I can give, if I made $100, I give $1. No, you're not tithing then. And here's the thing to understand when it comes to grace. Grace always goes further than the law. That's why we're saved by grace, because the law couldn't get us to Jesus. Grace always goes further than the law. And I would tell you this, if your grace giving doesn't exceed the tithe, it's really not grace giving. I'm not telling you, I'm telling you what I'm doing. I'm not saying you have to do this. But when I try to figure out the tithe, I do not try to figure out the exact penny. I just said, okay, if my tithe is $23.23, why don't I just give 25? Why don't I just give 30? I don't want to be afraid to give God money. Like, I don't know, if I give God too much money, what if I starve? I think the Lord can take care of me. And so that's it. Now that type of grace giving, I agree with. And grace always goes beyond the law. And if you're not going beyond the tithe, it's probably not grace giving, it's probably selfishness. So always put God first in your budget. However you're setting up your spending plan, all my life, from when I was 17 years of age, working at Hardee's, all the way through to this week when I got paid, okay? The first budget item on my spending plan is always the same, tithe. That's the first thing. Nothing else matters until that 10% goes to the Lord. It's His. I don't want to rob Him. I want to do it. It's not that I'm fearful. I want to do it. I want to honor the Lord. I want to please the Lord. I want to obey the Lord. It's in my heart to do this. So we always put God first in our budget. That's the first big concept. That deals with the forever. Number two. Here is the second concept. Pay your bills before buying non-essentials. That brings us to Proverbs 3. So this is the now part of the spending plan. So the forever part of the spending plan is we put God first. The now part of the spending plan is bills come before all the fun stuff. Proverbs 3. And look with me at verse 27. Withhold not good from them to whom it is due, like bills you owe, when it is in the power of thy hand to do it. Say not unto thy neighbor, go and come again, and tomorrow I'll give, when thou hast it by thee. In other words, if you owe something and you have the money, you pay your bills before you do other things, fun stuff. You pay your bills first. Now, it may be necessary to pay only part of a bill. Sometimes, because you're short of money, you can't pay the whole bill. But if you can't pay the whole bill, it should be because you're just short of money somehow. It's just, depending on where you're at in life, sometimes that happens. But it shouldn't be because, okay, if you can't pay your rent, it shouldn't be because you paid McDonald's. Because then you're not short on money, you just cheated your landlord so you could fill your belly full of Big Macs. So we don't forego paying a bill just because we want to do something else with the money. You say, well, you know what? I can't afford a new phone and pay my utilities. What should I do? What should you do? You should pay your utilities. You say, but then I won't have a phone. Pay the bills you owe. Okay. Well, you know, Pastor White, if I paid my bills, I couldn't go on vacation. The Lord wouldn't want me to stay from vacation. He'd want you to pay your bills. Now, what I'm saying is so basic, but it's amazing how many people out there haven't figured this out. You pay your bills before vacation, before new phones, before anything else. All the fun things we could be doing, you pay your bills. Okay? If you got it, you pay it. And if you don't have it, you pay what you can. You try to make arrangements for the others, but it's not because you're doing other things with it. Now, the value of a spending plan, the whole value of a spending plan is, in the now part, is to identify what money is available for bills and what's available for other things. If I have a spending plan and I start seeing how much money, and we'll give you some more information how we're doing this, but if I start seeing how much money coming in, I can say, okay, here's the money that goes to the bills, here's some that's left over, and I can do some things. Now, if I don't have a spending plan, here's what always happens. The other things takes precedence. And then the bills all of a sudden, well, I can't pay this bill, I can't pay that bill, because the other things, we didn't have any type of plan, and now other things took the precedence. Paying bills before other things will always save you money over time by avoiding late fees and other unnecessary expenses. Remember when we talked about credit cards? How much the average person who's rolling over, I think it was $7,000. Imagine you have a credit card debt of, let's just say $7,000. So your bill comes in, credit card, you owe $7,000. You make the minimum payment of $100. You know how you're getting killed in late interest. And if you go a month and not pay, and all of a sudden they add in late fees, man, they are just, that is going to kill you financially. So you got to pay your bills. So that's the now part. So the forever part, we put the Lord first. The now part, we pay the bills. Then there's a third part. That's the later part. Go with me to Proverbs 21. We use this verse in a different lesson. We'll use it again for this lesson. Proverbs 21, look at me, verse 20. So there's three parts to the spending plan. The forever, we deal with that by putting the Lord first. There's the now, and we deal with that by paying our bills before we think about other things we're going to do. Then there's the later part. Proverbs 21, verse 20, there is a treasure to be desired, and oil in the dwelling of the wise, but a foolish man spendeth it up. So that brings us to our third part of a spending plan. Have a savings account. You know, you may only be able to save a dollar a paycheck, but save something. Probably can do better than that, but save something. Now, the savings deals with several different areas of life. Here's one area it deals with. It is wise to put money aside during high-earning years to prepare for low-earning years. I have not always heeded that, mainly because I never thought I had a high-earning years. I had low-earning years trying to put money aside for lower-earning years, and that was somewhat of a challenge. But most people, you know, put some money aside. That's your retirement. You say, well, Pastor White, I'm going to trust the government and have Social Security. That may not be the best course of action. Social Security may be there, but I wouldn't count on them. I wouldn't count on living on your Social Security down the road. I don't know if you saw the article. The payment on our debt, not the debt, the payment on our debt is about to exceed, I think, even our payment on military, I think, or in all the entitlements. When you have $30 trillion in debt, and when they start increasing the interest rate, man, can you imagine the credit card bill they're paying? So, sorry, let's stay on the topic. So, have a savings account. Now, so that's the retirement, and maybe another concept of savings account. It's also wise to put money aside for unplanned expenses that will happen. Have you ever had something that cost you something that you weren't planning on spending until all of a sudden it hit you? Like a hot, you know, you go to bed at night and say, man, you know, I got a few bucks put aside. And you wake up and I hear water running. You go downstairs and your hot water tank's leaking. You're like, oh, there goes that. But aren't you glad you have some money to do it? So there's always unplanned expenses. Matthew 25, if you will. Matthew 25. Now, you can't forgo everything, but you can try to prepare the best you can within means. Here's an example of unplanned expenses. And sometimes they're unplanned as far as you don't know the time, but you know it's going to happen. You're going to eventually have to place a washing machine. I mean, they're not going to last forever. A dryer. You know, furnaces go out. Hot water tanks go out. Tires in your car wear out. Cars wear out, clothes wear out. I mean, you know, you don't know what day maybe, but you know it's going to happen. You know it's going to happen. So, you know, if you live like you make no preparation, when it hits you, that's when you're going to be in trouble. It's like, oh, I don't know how I'm going to do it. You should have been putting maybe a little aside as you went into it. That's what Matthew 25, now it's talking specifically about the Lord's return, but the concept of preparing is also taught here. So Matthew 25, verse 1. Then shall the kingdom of heaven be likened to 10 virgins which took their lamps and went forth to meet the bridegroom. And 5 of them were wise, and 5 were foolish. They that were foolish took their lamps and took no oil with them, no preparation. But the wise took oil in their vessels with their lamps. While the bridegroom tarried, they all slumbered and slept. And at midnight, so in other words, they knew, but they didn't know exactly when. It was unplanned as far as time. And at midnight, there was a cry made, "Behold, the bridegroom cometh. Go ye out to meet him." Then all those virgins arose and trimmed their lamps, and the foolish said unto the wise, "Give us up your oil." All of a sudden, now they're in a pinch here, for our lamps are gone out. But the wise answered, saying, "Not so, lest there be not enough for us and you, but go ye rather to them that sell and buy for yourselves." And while they went to buy, the bridegroom came, and they that were ready went in with him to the marriage, and the door shut. Afterward came also the other virgin, saying, "Lord, Lord, open us." But he answered and said, "Verily, I say unto you, I know you not. Watch therefore, for you know what know neither the day nor the hour when the Son of Man cometh." Now, I understand that's talking about the return of Christ, and I'm not trying to teach something different than that. But I'm saying within the teaching of the return of Christ, we're supposed to be thinking it's unplanned for our side. Now, we know the Lord has a plan, but it's going to happen. I just don't know when or where, so I'm living with that expectation. The same thing is true financially. There's certain things are going to happen. I don't know when, so I'm living with that expectation. I'm putting some money aside. So that's the other idea of a savings account. Part of it's retirement, part of it's unplanned expenses. Dr. Evans, our president of our Bible college, used to say this: failing to plan is planning to fail. If you make no plans, then what do you think is going to happen? You're going to have some failure here. In addition to retirement and emergencies, which is what we talked about, savings can be used for vacations and other planned expenses. Now, based on your income and the need, whether you have one kid or 21, you know, based on your income and need, there may still be times of financial distress. There's no way to perfectly run your life so there's never any financial distress. But you don't want the distress just because you're foolish and never even made any attempt. Okay, it may be a greater expense than I planned for, but at least I did plan, I did put something aside. I don't want to be because I was just foolish and wasted all of it. So those are the three areas. The forever is by putting the Lord first. The now is by making sure I pay my bills before I have the fun stuff in life. And number three is I put some money aside because there's things that I know is going to happen. Like, I'm going to get older someday, you know, next 50 years, I'm going to get older. So I need to think about that. I may have some things that are wear out, so I got to think about that. I'm maybe planning for a vacation, so I'm thinking about that. And so that's the later. That's part of my spending plan. So let me give you now some quick things about developing. So if I did that, here's basically some things I would do. Again, there's some different ways to do it. I'm not trying to give you such a strict way of doing it that you only can do it this way. There's different ways to do it, but here's some ways that make it happen. Okay, I'm going to give you just a list of them here. So if I was developing a spending plan, here's some things that would go in it. Here's the first: have a physical copy that you can view weekly. Okay, if someone says, "Hey, where's your spending plan?" and you do this, are you looking at me? If you go like this, okay, that's not good, because you're going to forget something. Before I was married, I ran everything right here. I knew how much money I had. I was the only one writing checks. I knew exactly how much was in the bank. I kept it all right here. And then I got married. And I still kept everything here, except someone else was spending money that wasn't up here in my head. And all of a sudden, the bank, they loved us so much, they started sending us notices to our house, wanting our attention into some deficits that we had at the bank. And I'm like, "Whoa, how did this happen?" Well, it happened because I'm spending money, and she's spending money, and there was no communication going on. So this doesn't work. This works a whole lot better. Now, I say physical. Obviously, years ago, everything was on paper. It can be digital. That's still a physical, something I can actually look at. Mine now is on a spreadsheet, and I pull it up, and I run numbers, and it's much easier to total things because I just put it in, and it keeps it running total of things. But you want something that you can look at, okay? You're going to forget things, and that's when it comes back and bites you. Here's the second thing. So that's the first thing, my physical plan. Here's the second thing, my spending plan. Here's the second thing. List your primary expenses first. Now, we already talked about tithe, your housing, your utilities, your car payment, your insurance. Those are primary expenses. You got to have, if you have a job, you most likely got to have a car to get there. You want to have a house. You know, house is more important than food. You can go 3 or 4 days without eating, but you want a house. You want somewhere to live. You don't want to be living on the street. If you have kids, you don't want to say, you know, you don't want to buy a station wagon and just, you know, park at different neighborhoods living in your station wagon. Okay, that's not cool. So you list your primary expenses first. Then you list your secondary expenses. There's a reason you separate these. What are secondary expenses? Food, clothes. You know, the Bible promises if you put seek ye first the kingdom of God, he will, the Bible says he'll add all these things. He'll meet your needs. Two of the things he mentions eating, drinking, and clothing. Okay, so that's why it's secondary. Medical bills, those are secondary. If it's a choice between paying Ohio Edison and Dr. Smith, Ohio Edison takes primary over Dr. Smith. Dr. Smith, I'm trying to pay you, but I'm going to take care of my family at the house before I worry about Dr. Smith and his third Mercedes. So list your secondary expenses next. Next, set aside an amount for savings. Now, there's a reason I'm dividing this up, and you'll see here in just a second. So I know my primary expenses, I know my secondary expenses, then I have a savings. So I have three sections I'm looking at. Now, here is where the rubber meets the road. Total your expenses and compare with your income. You hope you have a positive. Yes. In a moment, because I may answer it here in a second. All right? So you total those expenses. You have your primary expenses, you have your secondary expenses, you have your savings. Whatever that totals, now you look at what your income is. Okay? Basically, you're probably looking at a monthly, because that's, if you look at your expenses, those are going to be monthly type expenses. Now, what if it comes in the negative, which might just happen? Well, that's why we separate primary, secondary, and savings. You adjust your secondary expenses and your savings as needed. So let me offend. It may not you, but this is offensive to some people. People say, well, you know, it just takes $400 a week to feed my family. And if you got it, great. But if you don't got $400 a week, it doesn't take $400 a week. It takes what you got. If you got $150 a week and that's all you have, that's what you spend. You don't spend based on what you want. You spend based on what you have. That's the way it works. Well, they're going to go hungry. Let me just say this. Do you know most of the existence of people on this earth, they understood what hunger was, they understood what hard work was, they understood what sacrifice was? It's only been recently that we think that we got to have 2 cars and every kid's got to have his own bedroom and everyone's got to have 3 meals a day. That's not how we live most of the existence on this earth. Most of the existence on the earth, we had a bedroom. Sometimes it was dad, mom, bunch of kids, maybe at the end was the grandparents. That was the bedroom. Now, I'm not suggesting that it has to be that way. I'm just saying we lived, we survived, we actually did pretty well. We didn't always have 3 meals a day. Most of the time, it's probably 2 meals. You got up, you had a good breakfast, and before you went to bed, you had something else to eat, and you went to bed. You didn't always have to be organic. They went out in the field and dug up something or went and killed something and they cooked it up and that's what you had. You know, sometimes it went down to the basement and things that were left over from the year before and they'd take some of the mold off of it and say, okay, we can still eat this. Here, we'll eat this. And we survived. So sometimes I think we have forgotten that we don't always need what we think we need. So we adjust those secondary expenses and savings as needed. So I start taking, I can't spend this much here, and I can't spend this much here, and I can't save that much there. And so numbers start having to get crunched. What if at the end of the day there's still a deficit? Okay, you ready? Now everyone's going to get mad. You ready? If there's still a deficit, you pray, That's always a good idea. And you seek other additional income. Assuming that we're talking about honest, biblical things. You might have to work an extra job. You find a way to make it happen. Now, that's not a cookie cutter recipe type of budget. Those are principles that we put in as we do it. What's your question? Well, I would say that's the idea that it's ever been anything different than that is not true. The best it was, if it was when it was based on the gold standard, that was probably a good idea because there's something tangible that could be attached to. But you still had manipulation of the gold and the silver. Silver is a big one. A lot of people lost everything because they would manipulate the silver market. So manipulating governmental manipulation of our finances has always been. You're not going to solve the. You can't always overcome the corruption or the bad stuff. I'm just get cut to the chase. You can't always overcome the bad stuff. I would go by these same things. Saving money in the 50s. Your money is probably worth more than if you save money now, but that's not going to. I mean, you still got to save money. I think in the picture that we have tonight, that what we're dealing with tonight, I don't know if there's within these concepts there's a solution to that other than Jesus coming. Well, there's no doubt that land has gone through the ceiling. But there's more than owning land. Originally, the only way you could vote was by owning land. So it was more than they wanted you to own land. Owning land made you means you bought in to what was happening to your community. You were thought if you're a landowner, you are part of that thing. But in the broader thing, the trust has to be in the Lord. We can look at the world system, but you'll see over and over again in the Bible when those who lived in corrupt systems like Joseph or Daniel or people like that, they still excelled because the Lord went beyond those things. So I don't think that any believer is handcuffed because of a corrupt system. I think that circumstances of the world are going to impact us. I mean, that's just the reality of it. If stock market crashes, everyone who has money in stock market is going to lose it, saved or unsaved. So there are things like that is true. I think that, you'll see that there's people who try to come ways around some of those things. But there are definitely challenges that are different in this generation than in other generations, but other generations had different challenges than the generations before them. I mean, some things are always the way they are, but they're more magnified at different times. There was a time you know, that when you talk about medical, I mean, you got a cold and they're thinking, oh, you're going to die because there's nothing. But now, you know, right. And that has changed some of the things. All right, moving on. Conclusion. Let me give you a couple of things. Get back to my notes here. Because no two people will have the same expenses and income. No two people have the same spending plan. I alluded to that. That's why I'm not giving you a... I mean, the way I used to do my... When my kids were young, I'm talking about early 90s. Every month, my budget and my checking account had to reconcile to the penny. That's the only way I could exist, only way I could keep our head above water. I don't do that now. I have a buffer in my checking account, and the way I do my spending plan, I round off a lot of times. If I spend $9.82, I'll subtract $10. If I spend $10.15, I'll subtract $10. I have a good chunk of a buffer that I know that I can bounce around here on the top. It's not going to hurt me. Okay, things have changed. So what I'm saying is the principles haven't changed. Okay, but at different times, different things change in people's lives. Now, if you're one of these people who are to the penny, God bless you. I was at one time. I'm not so much now. Also, so you'll have different times in your life, different things like that. So also, the spending plan will change, which I just mentioned, at different stages in life based on different needs. You'll save more at different times in life than at other times. Probably when your kids get older, you'll save more than when your kids are younger. So, well, what happens? Your kids are younger and you spend more on your kids. But a spending plan is always needed, or else you will not properly prioritize. And this is all the way back full circle how we started. If we do not have the right spending plan, we're not going to properly prioritize loving God supremely, serving God sacrificially. That's what we're trying to do. We're not just trying to pay our bills. We're trying to put the Lord in the right place in our life and live for Him as we ought. That's why it's faith in finances. All right. We have finished the series. We have finished the lesson. Even so, come quickly, Lord Jesus. Let's pray.